I received an email from Reiner at Channel 292 in Germany that their 3955 frequency will be off the air for another 2 weeks at least. I guess it'll be back on the air the first full week of March.
Hi, this is John Hall. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 Accra.
Every Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m., Left Bank Ciders in Catskill holds a community soup night. Every Thursday, they gather to eat soup made by members of our community, with all the proceeds benefiting a local cause. The soup is homemade, delicious, and affordable. A donation gets you a bowl, some bread, and lots of camaraderie. There's always a vegetarian soup option, and a different charity or cause gets the funds raised each week. They have held several community soup nights for your community radio station, WGXC. Left Bank Ciders is at 150 Water Street in Catskill, and community soup night is there every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and happy new year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant.
Nathan McLaughlin, Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group. Good morning, WGXC listeners, and welcome to Live by Life program. I'm Kelly, a member of the Camp Hill Hudson Media Group, and my other colleagues in the studio with me are Kim and Lori and Michael. Today we have a special guest.
Nathan McLaughlin lives and works in Hudson, New York. He is a musician and artist, as well as former executive director of the Camp Hill Hudson community. Nathan's musical focus is on the intersection of acoustic and electronic instruments, the human being and going to the center. He is also a community member of Camp Hill. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
This is Michael and Lori. Say hello.
Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Lori. Hey, thanks, everybody, for having me.
Nice to have you in the studio here, and Tom's in the background. So we're going to get right to it, and Lori and I want to ask you this question. So, Lori, you want to ask Nathan, where were you born?
I was born in Florida with my father. It was nice down there.
And you're a special guest today, host. Yeah.
Host.
Shall we ask Nathan where he was born?
Yeah.
Let's ask him. You want to ask him?
Where you've been born, Nathan?
Yeah, I was born in a town called Haverty Grace in Maryland.
And where did you grow up?
Yeah, and I grew up in the town across the river from that, in a town called Perryville, Maryland, which is kind of at the top of the Chesapeake Bay.
That's far.
Maryland.
That's far?
Is it far? It's like 4 hours from here. It's not that far.
Yeah, and we are in the Hudson studio here, by the way, just so people know. So, yeah, not too far, but far enough.
Far enough.
Yeah.
That's Kelly.
Tell us about your family and childhood, and tell us how you met your wife.
Okay. My childhood was spent in the forest a lot, kind of lived in a very rural area. I had access to a lot of forest, so that's where I spent a lot of my time.
In Maryland?
In Maryland. And spent a lot of time there. Where I grew up, there weren't a lot of kids on the road or anything, on the streets. It was pretty rural. So spent a lot of time in the woods hanging out and getting to learn about nature. Pretty musical household. My mom and sister were playing music in the house a lot, but I didn't play music as a kid, really. I didn't really start playing that until college, which is where I met my wife, Maria, you asked about. I met my wife, Maria, in York, Pennsylvania, York College, which is where we were going.
York College. And, that gets actually to the next question. Tell us where you went. Tell us about college and what your major was. And what did you do after you graduated?
Yeah. It's kind of funny to talk about it because I have a degree in marketing, which is... a funny thing, cause it's not like I do corporate marketing or something.
Yeah.
but that's what I have a degree in. I have a minor in music industry, and I was really thinking to go work for record labels after college. And I did some of that in college. I worked for Madonna's label, Maverick, and I worked for some punk rock labels.
Okay.
Hellcat Records, some others.
You have any interesting stories from that time, working for that record company?
It was cool. I would get packages in the mail, and my job was to go around to all the record stores and promote shows and promote albums. So I would get to go see shows. I would get to go backstage, meet bands. I think the big band at the time on Maverick was Muse, a band called Muse. So okay. I got to go see Muse. And when I was doing that for Hellcat Records, I got to go to a lot of cool shows, meet a lot of cool punk bands back then. Not really any great stories, though, honestly. It was kind of anticlimactic doing that work. You would think it sounds a lot more glamorous than it was. It wasn't that.
Like most jobs, probably.
Yeah, like most jobs. So I didn't end up doing that, and I graduated and started doing this work where I was doing job training for inner city youth, and did that for a couple years, but at the time my wife was already in Camp Hill, and I was just increasingly intrigued by what was going on there. That was at Beaver Run. Laura, you know about Beaver Run.
Right.
You were a student there a long time ago. So I went to Beaver Run to be a teacher's aide, and that's where I first met Camp Hill and anthroposophical music.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of one step ahead of our questions, because Kim was going to ask what you just mentioned, which was, how did you...
Tell us how you got involved in the Camp Hill organization and where it took your life.
Yeah.
Maybe to reiterate, do you remember the specific moment where, like, you really... It was like, oh, this is a Camp Hill or...
I do.
Yeah.
I had been, going out there because my wife was in seminar. They call it the Academy now.
Yeah.
And so I would go there for presentations or different little events. I didn't really have a concept of what that was.
Yeah. This is in Pennsylvania, like 50 miles west of Philly.
Yeah. Chester County. Yeah. It can be hard to really understand what's going on there other than it's like beautiful and the people are really interesting and mm-hmm. all of those things. I was becoming kind of increasingly frustrated in my work because it was a nonprofit owned for-profit company and there were just a lot of ethical dilemmas happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember saying to my wife, I don't care what they need. Like, I would go be the janitor, which is actually, that's still a job I think about going to do because I like to do that. But they didn't need a janitor. They had that. They needed a one-on-one classroom aide. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. So This is a fun story because I went out. They were like, yeah, maybe you could come have an interview. And coming from the business world, I thought, oh, okay, I know what an interview is. it's not what that was. I met with this guy, Bernie.
Yeah.
For folks that know, Bernie has this amazing long beard and just, he's always wearing a flannel shirt. So I meet up with Bernie and we go on this little walk and he has this little note card, like an index card in his pocket. And he keeps pulling that out because it has information on it, I guess he wants to ask me about. And we're just, so it's this sort of interview. But then he's like, okay, I need you to go up to the schoolhouse and meet this teacher. That's who you would be maybe working with. Mm-hmm. I want you to go meet her. And I thought, well, that's strange. Like, I don't know her at all. I only know, like, three people there. Like, how? What am I going to do? But what he was trying to do, I think, was see if I could, like, navigate a social situation. Go up there and introduce myself and kind of just navigate that, which I did. And then the teacher did something like that to me as well. I'm in the classroom just kind of observing, and then it's time for recess. So we go to the playground, and there's this young man, and I could tell that she, like, put me out there without any instruction to see if I could kind of immerse myself in that. And I really wanted to do this. So for people that know me, that's not really my personality, but I did that, ended up, I got that job and I went there and thus began, and not to be overly dramatic, but it's true, a sort of like life-changing year and a life-changing experience that changed the whole trajectory of my life to such an extreme that I thought I'll never go work in an office again. Yeah.
Kelly.
Yay to no office.
Yeah. Well, that didn't last, that's another story. Kelly. But the thing about it, and it's different. What changes people is different for each person, obviously, when they go to Camp Hill. But for me, it was so enjoyable to be relieved of myself. Mm. I had to give myself over because these were like really intense classroom situations I'm in. Yeah. So all day long, I have no choice but to be fully in it and in service. And I found that liberating. It's stressful, but I also found that it changed really who I was drastically.
Do you remember how old you were, if you don't mind sharing, when you had that initial interview?
26. I'm 43.
Yeah. 43. Yeah, and that whole how Bernie and the teacher, that's kind of the Camp Hill way, right? It's kind of like, and let's see who you are.
I liked that so much that I did that to countless people in Camp Hill in all the years since. For folks at Camp Hill Hudson, if you remember me ever sending random people into tea break without me there, that's what I was doing.
Yeah,
I'd be like, the tea breaks, a couple floors down. And if the person could do that, and then I would come down maybe 15 minutes later and see if they had kind of settled into that, then they're good to go. Or if we didn't have the time, I'd be like, I want you to come back on Wednesday at 10 a.m. And if they did that, showed up and did all of that on their own, then they're good to go. And you're working with someone who successfully navigated that. That's Svetlana. She did that.
Okay.
And I remember coming down and seeing, yay, Svetlana, seeing her in the tea break, and I thought, well, she belongs.
It's also very minimal. It's not very taxing. It's just like, it's like so much less, oh, I have to do this to help them, whereas actually you do the opposite.
That's right. and that's an important lesson for people to learn kind of up front. Helping someone is a bonus to being with them on their journey. Mm-hmm. And I found that a lot of my days at Beaver Run were spent just walking alongside someone on their journey. Someone's having a tough day in class. They send me, because I'm the classroom aide, out onto this trail system. I spent hours and hours on this trail system, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm just alongside them while they're having their bad day, and that's an honor and a joy, really. Yeah.
Being there.
The only time it was nerve-wracking was when Maria was pregnant. So she was very pregnant, and I was so worried because I didn't really carry a cell phone or anything at the time. I had to go get a cell phone just in case I'm in the woods and she goes into labor.
Oh, okay.
I would need to get
be
back.
Alerted.
She was in the schoolhouse, but still, I'd want to get back there because otherwise I could be out for hours, mm-hmm. you know, without a phone or anyone really knowing where I am.
Did you get notified while you were?
No, she worked labor? In the classroom until the bitter end. I mean, she was so pregnant in that classroom because she was working.
Oh,
she was a teacher.
Yeah, because yeah. your first son was born in June.
Yeah.
So she made it through the school year and then...
Yep, by like a week.
Gave birth on her own birthday.
gave birth on her birthday, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a gift that must have been.
I know.
Yeah. As much as I'd love to keep picking your brain about that, I think we should go to the next question. Kim, do you see... you want to?
How long have you lived in Columbia County and what brought you and your family here?
Sure. So I've been in Columbia County, it'll be 11 years in May, which for me is like a record to be in one place. Camp Hill brought me here. I was in Camp Hill, Minnesota with my family before I came here. And I came here because I started doing the outreach work on behalf of Camp Hill and needed to be in a more centrally located place. So I came to Hudson because Camp Hill Hudson had just bought Solaris. And it was almost an empty building, as I'm sure Michael remembers and Lori remembers. Because Lori, you were already there. And they had an office. And so there I am back in the darn office, you know, after all those years of thinking I'm done with the office. There I am.
But it was in a different way, though. Being directly involved on the ground, so to speak, especially with children at Beaver Run, which is very intense. I mean, I was at Triform, and that was intense enough. But but you had that sort of direct connection still, even though...
Absolutely, yeah. You know. Yeah, and, you know, we had been life-sharing and house parenting in Minnesota. And,
So Lori and I want to ask you this question. Yeah, so you kind of, well, you didn't quite allude to it, but let's ask him, how did you join Camp Hill Hudson?
How did you join Hudson?
Well, you know, if for anyone that's spent time around Camp Hill Hudson, it's hard not to join Camp Hill Hudson. And I was just talking to Maria, you can ring the bell, because it's very true.
I didn't want to overkill it, but yeah. Yay. How could you not want to join?
I
love that.
Well, I was talking to my wife the other day, because in the mission statement of Camp Hill Hudson is play. Playing is part of the mission, which is the only Camp Hill that I'm aware of that has that in their stated mission. And it's a joyous place to be. And, you know, I had my office right there, right in the middle of everything. So, I mean, I got kind of wrapped into it pretty quickly, probably within that first year, because it's a wonderful thing to do. At the time, I was traveling a lot, so I probably missed a lot of things. But as time was going on, I joined some different working groups in Camp Hill Hudson. I joined the finance group, and I joined the core group. And I don't know if Cam will hear this. Cam was the director before I was, who essentially convinced me that I should I should take over her role as the executive director. And, you know, to be honest, it took some convincing because it's a hard job.
Yes, I hear. We laud you for it.
So, it did take a little while for me to make that leap, just because I knew kind of the level of commitment there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was the decision wasn't about me. It was about all of you.
To be of service. So it kind of came back in a different way. Yeah, after having that on the playground.
There's a Carl Koenig quote. Carl Koenig was the founder of Camp Hill. And Michael's heard me read this quote many times. I won't read the whole thing. I'll paraphrase it, which Carl Koenig talked about being a servant more than a leader.
Yeah.
And to be a monk-like approach to that, have a monk-like approach to that. And I really tried to, and still do, try to live that.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't read that verse in a while. That makes me want to go grab it again. Yeah. Be more of a servant than a leader. And that gets back to the side-by-side kind of what you mentioned before, with those walks with the individuals you were helping.
And to be a listener.
To be a listener.
More than someone who's ordering people. You're keeping order more than you're ordering.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating thing, because if you're the ED, it's executive kind of is action.
Yeah.
And yet you have to listen to when you need to take action. So
you're carrying out the action that's the will of the people
that
are around you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned music a little bit earlier, but we want to know how you did mention how you got into playing music later.
Yeah.
But what was your kind of first memory of really saying, wow, I really am taking to the guitar, which is your primary instrument, right? Do you have a specific moment where you like, I think I really want to do this? And how would you describe the music you play?
Yeah, so it was some years of playing music as like a keyboard player before I picked up the guitar. And it was really because I was playing music with this guitarist. His name's Chris Monahan, wonderful guitar player. And I don't know, like his approach to that instrument and his tone just made me really want to play guitar. But that was like 2-3 years into playing together. So I didn't start playing guitar till I was 23.
Mm.
Because I had moved into this apartment that kind of had a kind of rehearsal space that just had a lot of instruments around, so I was really fortunate I could pick up any of them and play the guitar, which became like a real passion for me. The music I'm playing these days is primarily based on the Rudolf Steiner's Planetary Scales, and I'll play some of those for you in a bit. So there is acoustic music in that, which is all I brought today. There's electronic elements to that as well, because there's like a duality to, I guess, the music I play that can be very earthy and acoustic and then also very kind of electronic or experimental, which is actually how I first learned about WGXC and Wavefarm and all the cool stuff that goes on there.
Yeah, that's good, and we're going to have you play a song from one of your albums from the Planetary Scales in a minute. But I think also the first time, I think you were not the ED yet, but I remember my first real impression memory of you is when you and others, sound makers, had some event at Olana that was like using the elements of nature that you would find on Olana and just making sounds. I don't know if I would even say music, but soundscapes, Mike. Yeah. And I remember seeing you and others, and you were, using the leaf and so on. And so it might have looked ridiculous. I love the juxtaposition of how serious, not serious, but how reverent. And I'm always someone that goes between being reverent and sort of a little bit silly. But I mentioned to you afterward, I said, it sounds like you all are trying to like tap into like the Andy Goldsworthy version of sound.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah. You were like very emphatic, like, yeah, that's it. And
that is it.
And I wonder, if the song you're going to play kind of comes out of this, just coming from the elements, you said earthiness and yet electronic and... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of that fundraiser you used to have there at Olana. Do you remember that?
What's the name? Woodshed. I don't remember.
But it was a Wave Farm event.
A Wave Farm.
It was a WGXC fundraiser event, and we were performing as part of the John Cage Trust.
Mm.
So there is this sort of serious academic element to that. We were performing a John Cage piece called Branches.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this serious academic element, and then there's the the fun element of that. And that, is definitely, I relate to that well. And, being a woodsy guy.
Hello.
playing that there was really special because you have to acquire the bulk of the instrumentation from the surrounding area. You bring a cactus.
You bring a cactus.
You bring one.
Cactus.
That's, a cactus.
That's,
okay.
That's indicated in the composition, but you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
In the John Cage.
Yes.
Okay.
And the durations are calculated ahead of time. Mm-hmm. That we each play, so it's all very intentional.
Very,
we're timing each other and stuff.
I see.
But the instrumentation is fun because you go collect it.
Yeah.
And there are certain pieces that he wanted you to have, and then there's others you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should do another one of those. But in the meantime, you do have your guitar right here in the studio.
Yeah.
Tell us. And I mean, by the way, you have several albums, and I kind of took a peek on Bandcamp and I think Spotify. But what's this album and, yeah, the song?
Yeah, I'll play for you. It's Thursday, so we'll play Jupiter. Jupiter is the planet of the day. So this is, I'll play an acoustic version of Jupiter, and I'll also do a little kind of Jupiter improvisation in there as well. The first part of this piece you can hear on the Bandcamp release, the Planetary Music series, which features these recordings for Jupiter feature my buddy Dan Pell, I want to mention briefly because Dan just had a radio performance go live yesterday on XPN. So if folks mm-hmm. are into this, they should go listen to Dan Pell.
Very good.
Yeah. That's good to see.
So yep. Get the guitar ready, and there's beautiful artwork on this planetary scales. When you go to the Bandcamp, you'll see
there is I should have mentioned that the artwork for that series is by this artist Lena Algahov, really talented art therapist.
Okay, so here it is, Jupiter.
Don't touch Nathan.